Hello there, bounty hunters. This week's episode contains spoilers for both the PS1 and PS2 video games. If you anticipate ever playing them, let's get this episode today. Hello, I'm Jamie Sanchez, and I paid $100 for a game I can't play.
I'm Lauren Fates, and my favorite video games are Earthbound, Mass Effect, and not Cowboy Bebop.
Are you ready for the beat?
I'm ready for the beat. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Bebop Beat. We are coming off of two really intense episodes with two awesome people who have portrayed Gren, and we're now taking another break from the anime for a bottle episode. This is one of my favorite topics as a lifelong member of Gamer Nation. I say that ironically. I don't actually feel that excited about my identity, but I am a gamer. I love video games. This is the video games of Cowboy Bebop.
Today we're chatting about both the PS1 and PS2 games, and we're dropping in with my friend Derek Fields of Waking Oni Games to talk about their adaptations.
So Jamie, before we get into it, I just want to address what you said right in the opening there. You paid $100, but you can't play it. Tell us this story.
Yes. So during one of my many outings to a convention, I'm usually on the hunt for a Cowboy Bebop swag or something like that, and I usually don't expect to find it. And one year, I had $100 burning a hole in my pocket, and lo and behold, there's this box. And this box has Cowboy Bebop on it, and it's covered in packaging paraphernalia. It looks like it's been shipped around the galaxy, for example, looking for a long-lost Faye Valentine. So I'm like, oh, $100? Sure. Here, vendor. Here's my $100. Give me box. And I don't even see that there's a logo that says PlayStation 2 on it. I don't even understand what's in this box. I just want the box. I open it up, and this is the first time I realize, like, oh, there are game adaptations of the show. And so I'm kind of like thumbing through the things. The box itself comes with a t-shirt, a little wrist strap with some Edcons on it for, say, your cell phone at the time, and a 3-song CD included as well for this video game that's also included. And I open it up, I'm like, oh no, this is PS2 and region locked to Japan only. How am I going to play this thing? And I literally went out and tried to find things like bootloaders, and it just took so long, Lauren. I was searching high and low to figure out how to play this thing. And once I finally got it working, I couldn't get past the tutorial mode. No one had translated the thing. There were no walkthroughs of the game at the time. And so I was just like, well, I guess I own this and I'll never understand what it's about.
So because Jamie had this experience, when we were splitting up the work we wanted to do for this episode, we more or less said Jamie was going to be in charge of talking about the PS2 game and I would be in charge of talking about the PS1 game and finding a way to play it. I did this through emulators and a ROM because these games have never made it stateside. It was not translated. I played the PS1 game in Japanese. Similar to our manga episode, we're going to tell you a little bit about the stories of each, the gameplay experiences, and I guess our reviews in a way. The thing is, even though I was in charge of PS1, I took way, way, way more notes about PS2 because it is a much more robust game, and it sounds like the marketing behind it and the, like, a special edition with a t-shirt, it sounds like the release was much more robust too.
I don't think I've ever even seen the PS1 game in the wild. I don't even know if it exists anymore. Did they put it in the hole with E.T.?
Oh no, they put it in the landfill. There was a documentary about that being real, by the way. If you've ever heard that urban legend about all of the E.T. copies being dumped into the trash, it really did happen.
So Lauren, please tell us about the PS1. Your experience is going to be a total gold mine here for me.
Okay, a gold mine, That's a matter of opinion, but sure. I did actually enjoy this. I'm not going to say I enjoyed it because it was a great game. The PS1 game is just called Cowboy Bebop. It was released in 1998, which feels like a really long time ago. I cannot recall what games I was playing back then. Probably my favorite Earthbound, to be honest. It is a rails shooter title, which to me feels very inspired by Star Fox. I think they saw the success of that game and wanted to do something similar. The controls are similar, but worse. And I actually thought it was really cute that while you are flying around, you play Spike in the Swordfish 2. You do not play as any of the other characters or other ships. The members of the Bebop crew pop up on the screen, just like the other animals used to in Star Fox. Down to when you die, Faye will scream, "Spike!" And it was very much like, I believe Slippy was the frog in Star Fox, and he would cry out every time you crashed. And I crashed a lot. This is not an easy game, even on easy mode, with the Y-axis reversed, which is the only way I can play flying games.
Lauren, I have a big confession to make.
Oh no.
So friends know I help co-organize an indie game festival called Bit Bash here in Chicago. I'm actually not a really good gamer at all. I'm terrible. I tried my hand at this game too, and I died constantly. There was just nothing about it that I could wrap my head around. And a lot of it is I have really poor spatial accuracy. So 3D games just do not work for me.
I don't think it's your fault necessarily. I did get better and better at this game. There are several levels. The first one is called Canyon Strike. You move on to a desert city at night, then a canal city. There actually is a story here. I couldn't help but notice there was sort of a through line, and it's probably accidental, between this game and the manga that we read. So the whole crew is hanging out. I don't speak Japanese, but from as much as I can tell, they were watching television. And there's this Chewbacca-like character and this Han Solo character and a score that is very akin to Star Wars. And suddenly, they're pulled against their will through a gate. And it reminded me a lot, Jamie, of the dark gates from the manga. Like, there are these secret gates you could just sort of stumble across, and they take you to new and weird places, and only a few people know about them. And the plot is they meet this woman who is part of a resistance that's fighting off this mysterious enemy, and you help her fight the bad guys, who are all of these ship styles that aren't in the anime at all. They're just exclusive to this title, in hopes that you get home. I did not get home. I did not beat this game, but I see what they're going for. The reason I think it's hard is because it's only a rails shooter sometimes. You stay on the rails through the canyon for 95% of level one, and then when you finally get to the boss fight, you are dumped off of the rails into this open sort of circle, and you have no experience at this point flying when you're actually in control of your own speed and direction. And so this boss has just got all of these cannons and they're just handing your ass to you. And I struggled to even get the ship swung around far enough that it was pointing back at the boss. I kept turning Spike around and then being like right on top of the cannon and crashing into it. And I'm a good gamer, in my opinion. I have played hundreds of games and I love getting achievements and I love really, you know, exploring the far depths of games and trying to achieve really interesting and difficult milestones with video games. And man, this was rough.
Of the few minutes I did get to play where I was constantly dying, it struck me as odd that the enemy had a ton of ships, that there were stations that you had to shoot down and a giant stationary big boss cannon. I'm like, none of this says Cowboy Bebop to me.
No, it really doesn't. There's not a lot in the environments that says Bebop to me. And even the music, it felt more like somebody was going for a Sonic the Hedgehog vibe, in my opinion, and not what we know to be the soundtrack of Cowboy Bebop. I'm not sure why this had to be a Bebop story. That said, the graphics I'm very hot cold on. I actually think the model of the Bebop itself looks really cool. And there are moments in these sort of cutscenes where the Bebop is sitting against this painted sunset, and it's beautiful. The characters are beautiful too. They're drawn in this 2D, almost Super Nintendo style. So when they pop onto the screen, it looks straight out of the anime. They're not trying to do like a weird 3D rendering, which we'll get to in the PS2 version. I also want to note that Jet Black is actually a black man in this game. The way they color these characters, this is the most powerful argument I've seen so far to the fan theory that he is supposed to be a person of color. And that is a very interesting stance for this little-known video game to take. And I want to know if that was intentional on their part, if they had a discussion, or this just sort of panned out that way. Because he popped up on the screen and I went, oh, nice.
I don't think we'll ever know, though, truly.
Yeah, I don't think there's anyone we can ask. So my experience with this game, I'm really glad that I played it. I used an emulator because there is no way to get it in a reasonable fashion currently in America. But there's something about it that you wouldn't feel just watching YouTube videos. There is a long play, about an hour-long video you can see online of somebody else playing through it. But the emotional feeling of figuring out how to fly the ship, right? Like how to do a barrel roll. And for me, when I finally figured out how to fire the laser, my heart actually kind of leapt because we don't have an instruction manual. There isn't anything in this game that tells you how it works. So I was just sort of flying by the seat of my pants. And once I got that ruby laser going, I was like, I'm going to tell them all. They're going to find out now. And I actually got excited for a couple of moments. It was really fun.
But how long did you actually play the game?
I probably played it for less than an hour.
So a couple minutes for a full hour of gameplay?
Yeah.
Sounds like a positive review.
I don't think it is. And honestly, having watched the longer play on YouTube, I think it gets worse over time. I think the cityscape, the like nighttime skyscraper environment is pretty poorly drawn. And when you upgrade the ammo, apparently later on, you get the opportunity to upgrade your laser or switch out the laser for some missiles. There is a like a lightning or electricity laser you can use. And it is the most horrible sound I've ever heard in a video game. I was telling you and Angela earlier that this is the most like aurally distressing thing I've come across in the video game world. And I've played a lot of games. It just makes this brrr sound that is so grating. I'm glad I didn't get any further than I did. So no, not really a positive review. But I got to blow some stuff up.
That's a plus.
Yeah, so that's really all I have to say about it. Because there's so little meat here, every level basically boils down to point your ship at bad guys, hold down shoot button, bad guy goes away, until suddenly you're thrown into a boss level where you have to fly your ship without any rails, and it's wild and difficult. We're going to talk to our guest a little bit later about why the quality of this game might be what it is, or why it may have come out the way it did. But until then, why don't you tell us a little bit about the PS2 game?
Sure thing. So Cowboy Bebop, Suiku no Serenade, or as it's known in English, Cowboy Bebop Serenade of Reminiscence, was an action-adventure fighting game from Bandai, made for the PS2 and released in 2005. It's a single-player adventure game in which you switch off between our main trio and you get to activate different combat modes throughout the game. And this is very much context-dependent based on the narrative that you're facing at the moment. My experience with this game is purchasing the box set and not being able to play it. So I was really excited when I had this opportunity to hunt down the emulator, get it to work, and figure out what the meat of this game is all about. There are fortunately lots of playthroughs and reviews from various people around the game sphere about like the history of the game, what it's doing well, what it's doing poorly. And also, fortunately, two things I found that actually made my gameplay experience tolerable. One is a game FAQ walkthrough that explicitly states what all the action does, like how the controllers work, how the combos are expected to function, and then also just a general walkthrough of all the action scenes, like the actual challenges you need to go through to defeat the bad guys in each stage, because a full game in Japanese doesn't necessarily help an English speaker in any way, even though the tutorials might be frequent and also cutely done by Ed, who keeps popping up on the screen. The other asset I was using was a translation movie done by Studio Sokure, who is best known for the fan parody Evangelion Redeath. They put together a 10-part video known as Cowboy Bebop, The Song Remains the Same, which is a fan edit version of all of the cutscenes from this video game. It's fully subtitled, so you understand what the plot is all about. And it's also lightly edited so that all of the videos have context to them, even though the video game is maybe a little different in its linear narrative. So why doesn't a video game like this from the PS2 made in 2005 have an English version? Turns out Bandai Games Division was merged with Namco in 2005. They formed the new company Namco Bandai, and it's likely the US version or an English release of this never made it through. It just kind of was lightly promoted for a time on their website and then softly disappeared. So given all that, knowing my game experience, the other issue I encountered when playing this game was I had some weird tech issues. My D-pad was really choppy. It would go straight up or down or left or right, but it often didn't like directional coordinates in between those states. And I was also experiencing some frame rate issues and general lag at certain key points of the game. And I presume that's just an issue with emulation. But that did not impact my experience too negatively. I will say that this was a fun game to pick up and play. So let's dive into a little bit of that.
I will just say, as an offshoot, I'm not entirely ready to blame the emulation being the problem, because we're very spoiled in 2021 gaming, but I can remember a like Resident Evil where gaming was still really struggling with directions and like, is up on the joystick always upward on the screen, or is it relative depending on where the camera is? We went through some garbage back in the day.
Yeah, that's fair. I think my biggest frustration was navigating the environments. There seemed to be a lot of boxes, like invisible boundaries that I couldn't quite detect, especially those that were angular, that my character would chop around. And you just kind of like do this little flailing back and forth, like shimming his shoulders and running into invisible objects. And I didn't know what was happening.
Yeah, that might just be the game as designed. So I watched a YouTube playthrough of most of the cutscenes as well. And I noticed just a lot of the animation was not up to what I would expect. There was really slow looking chase action through some of the mini games. There was a car crash in which the van, it didn't crumple. The model didn't change at all. Just the whole car just kind of flipped and bounced around. And I watched Spike Spiegel kick a large crate out of existence. Like, it was like the animation should have shown maybe the box collapsing. And instead it was sort of like, boop. And there was not enough rubble surrounding the box to justify what had just happened. A lot of that box was kicked into another dimension.
I will say I appreciated the character models. In particular, Spike's high-end chases, not so great. But all his punchy, kicky stuff was a lot of fun. And it reminded me a lot of Streets of Rage.
Yeah, I got the impression that they were sort of trying to do with Faye a like Dead or Alive style animation. Each character's brawling looks a little bit different, and I liked what they were trying to do. Also, big shout out to the voice acting. Both the PS1 and PS2 games appear to be fully voice acted by, I think, the original cast. And if that's true, that is so cool.
Yeah, one of the reviews I read on Kotaku stated that this is the original voice cast. They were a little disappointed that the mouth flaps didn't match, but given the period at which this was released, I think we're expecting a little too much. Speaking of that review, it goes on to say that most of the combat, such as the brawling, the chasing, and the shooting scenes, were bad. I would agree. The brawlers, there were moments that I couldn't quite figure out what was going on with Spike's moveset. Like, there's some good combos there. I only got through the first two areas of the game and kind of gave up, a little bored. That being said, what the game lacks in play mechanics, it makes up for in its environment and in its story.
Yeah, I read a review, I think it was in fact Kotaku, that said this is not so great a game, but is a decent Cowboy Bebop story. And though it suffers, in my opinion, from some pacing issues, I think the new characters are great and the story is actually worth hearing about. So I think we'll maybe talk about it just for a short time, like it's any other episode.
The other interesting part about this game in particular, and I will give it big merit for that, they're using original music from the show. We're hearing a lot of the similar tracks we hear in episodes of the show, and three new ones that were specifically created for this game. You can hear them on the Tank the Best album, and those tracks are known as Pearls, Diamonds, and Einstein Groovin'.
Einstein Groovin' is such an interesting choice for what to call a track from this game, because in my notes, all I wrote about Ayn was that this poor dog was just terribly rendered. He looks really awful, and he's not a key plot point. So to have a song that kind of has his name in it, interesting call.
His bark is also not the same bark from the show. I'm just a little salty about that, but that's okay. We'll move on.
So this story starts like any other bounty hunting day. The Bebop cast is in an aquarium trying to catch a $3 million Wulong bounty named Patrick Johnson. Spike finds him illegally selling some fish, and they do catch the bounty, and they actually get to talk to the bounty more than I think they do in a lot of anime episodes. But of course, things go really pear-shaped. There is an explosion, and nobody knows where it came from. It floods the entire aquarium, and the Bebop crew, whatever they made in the bounty catch, is probably going to go back to fixing this aquarium. Spike stumbles across an object. It's playing a song, and that song is called Diamonds. Diamonds is by, in World, it's an artist named Priscilla, and she recorded it over 50 years ago. Fun fact, me watching this on YouTube, I think those songs must have hit some copyright issues and my YouTube video went silent anytime Diamonds actually played. Thank goodness I have my vinyl record.
So the next scene after we learn about Diamonds on the Bebop is a cut from Big Shot. We get to see Punch and Judy and they're talking about a plethora of bounties that have been released. A lot of small fry, essentially. But the crew is hungry, as usual. They don't know how they're going to make ends meet. They kind of agree, hey, yeah, let's start tracking these heads down.
Yes, and they end up tracking a lot of these small fries to an island, I guess. And it took me a long time to realize where we were location-wise in this plot. Like, we get to the end of the game and this big plot surrounding this island and what was supposed to happen there is revealed. And I was like, oh, we've been on the island a lot longer than I thought. But that's probably because I was watching a summary video. If I'd played the whole thing, maybe it would have been clearer.
I think that's where the fan edit really helped put the pieces together. We find out pretty quickly that there is a space pirate known as Captain H, who's a Robin Hood figure, essentially, from 50 years ago. They were robbing from the rich and giving to the poor and supposedly sitting on a huge fortune, billions and billions of Wulongs. And Faye instantly resonates with that and says, I'm going to go find it.
She does. And this Captain H character is a pretty big deal in universe. They said he even got his own cartoon in his time. So this is a pretty famous legend, I gather.
That's my understanding, too. Yeah.
The rest of the crew really makes fun of Faye. They think she is being gullible and easily taken in. And in true Faye style, she's like, well, that just means when I get it, I won't have to share it with you. And she does not have a problem taking on this mission by herself.
This is where the plot gets a little strange to me. I couldn't quite tell if they wanted us, at least from a video game direction, to hunt down a lot of bounties going forward, or if now the Captain H treasure hunt was the main plot going forward. After Faye says she's going to run off and find this bounty herself, this is where I get a little confused because we see Spike at a cafe with the three old men on a stakeout for a man named Steve Chase. He approaches Steve when he shows up, and Steve is somehow knowledgeable about this song, Diamonds, which we've already encountered. He says he's after the treasure of, quote, Priscilla's unpublished song, which forms a pair with Diamonds.
Yeah, this was the most shoehorned in part of the plot, in my opinion. This, like some bebop stories, is very full of coincidences. And this music producer guy, Steve, just happens to walk by Spike, happens to bring up a song that he's interested in finding, and it happens to be one that Spike heard on a completely unrelated mission just like days before. And I wish someone had commented in the cast, like, wow, this is sure weird. This is all really ironic, but they just let it come together.
The scene is interrupted then by two new characters, Bianca and Kent. They are siblings, and they also happen to be hunting Steve for reasons unknown.
Bianca and Kent are known, at least to themselves, as the twin shooting stars. They are amateur bounty hunters. They're kind of after the same rush of bounties that the Bebop crew is. But they end up, of course, very coincidentally tied into the Captain H story as well. Other new characters in this game include Ellen and Ronald. Ellen, again, appears to be like another maybe old flame of Jet's, very similar to Ganymede Elegy, just like a woman that he knows from the past working in a bar. She says her partner Ronald is dead. We find out later that's not true. He is our big bad. And Ronald was supposedly a good cop. But unlike Jet, who quit the ISSP to get away from corruption, Ronald gets so sick so quickly of the job and the reputation and the responsibilities that he kills all of his subordinates, rounds up bounties to lure bounty hunters to an island, and wants to blow the whole place up. And that is kind of the driving force behind most of this game. I didn't find a lot of the gameplay super relevant or super exciting. It was quite slow. Many chase scenes. There is a bomb disarming game. There's some first person piloting that is notoriously kind of poor, but each of our new characters kind of gets matched up with one of our old characters. So Faye is matched up with Kent and helps him become a man, as she says. He is one of the grandchildren of Captain H, and Faye believes that his watch holds the key to finding the treasure. Bianca, meanwhile, ends up on the musical plot with Spike. Bianca is also a grandchild of Captain H, and the relic she has with her is this hologram of Priscilla. So Priscilla and Captain H were lovers, thus tying our two major plots together.
In that moment when Spike is looking at the hologram, he also finds a chip, and he happens to pocket it like he does, you know, just take the thing that our main characters are most interested in. But we don't find out its relevance until towards the end of this episode, if you will. It's worth mentioning that in between all these plot points, we cut back to action of the game. You're shooting in certain scenes, you're kicking and punching in others. Faye's character, her punches land a little lighter, but she's more nimble. Jet is a heavier puncher, but he's slower overall. So there is the action and intrigue in interacting with these environments. There are destructibles littered all around. Things blow up. You can kick consoles and garbage cans and all that good stuff. So it adds a real texture to the game that I didn't get in the video walkthrough.
Yeah, the walkthroughs actually skip a couple of key moments, namely when you do the bomb disarming minigame. This is actually a critically acclaimed portion of the game because Jet explores rooms and areas of the Bebop that aren't really seen in the anime and give fans an unprecedented sort of map of what the inside of that ship really looks like. And I think that's a cool treat. There is one more new character that I hadn't mentioned yet. Her name was Chang Ling Lei, and she was just kind of another syndicate leader who's after the treasure. She's a pretty cool character design. She's your classic, like, cackling anime villainess. And she's mostly there, I think, just to throw more punchy, kicky thugs at our characters. Bianca's design is really cute to me as well. She fills an anime trope that is not in the rest of the cartoon, which is giant rifle girl. There's like a very Sarah's Victoria Helsing vibe to her. And she's just constantly lugging around this giant gun and you're waiting for it to pay off. And it does when they manage to track the big bad out into space. She and her brother team up and shoot a tracker onto Ronald's ship so he cannot get away.
Of some unfortunate things that I caught in the game, Kung Fu Street and Oolong Town. That felt a little ham-fisted here.
I agree. Overall, I don't think I'm a huge fan of the gameplay here or the character designs here, but I think it might be worth playing this game or at least watching the videos for a solid Cowboy Bebop story. There is a lot of intrigue, you know, a bar gets shot up by a mysterious car outside and it seems like Jet's old flame may be to blame. It's like extremely noir. I actually think this game adds on the lore of bounty hunters. Bianca is convinced that Spike and Jet can't be bounty hunters because they're too rough looking and they look poor. And apparently you're drawn into the bounty hunter lifestyle because you think you're going to make lots of money and be very glamorous and well off. And it makes me wonder what other bounty hunter characters are out there in the universe and what sort of energy they're putting off that it makes Spike look like such a schlub.
I think we'll get to that with Cowboy Andy.
Dream language also comes up a lot. I mean, like literal references to dreams. They really do a decent job trying to tie this back to the Spike and Julia dream and how Spike sees the world. I was really taken by Faye's statement that dying for a dream that you were chasing is not happiness. And Spike, when he finally confronts our big bad, he says that he doesn't care about Ronald's dream or his own. And there is that kind of Spike death wish again.
Yeah, I would say that if this game were to somehow be reborn, I would love to see a full adaptation of it or recreation of it on a modern console. I think it has a lot of good bones. The action itself has a lot of interesting texture and energy. I think the audio was really well done overall in the game. It is kind of a shame we don't get this plot outside of the game too, because I know so many people won't be able to experience it for themselves. But we do get the sense that this is an extension of the Cowboy Bebop universe, and this slots perfectly in with all the other things we know true about it.
Yeah, somebody who made this, or maybe many somebodies who made this, really did care about Cowboy Bebop, and we can see that in the references inserted throughout. You mentioned the three old men already. There is also bell peppers and beef, and a reference to missiles being really expensive and Jet not liking to buy too many of them.
So, you know, all the standard hallmarks of your typical Cowboy Bebop episode.
Yep, all the hits.
So the conclusion of this game comes when Spike beats the crap out of Ronald, therefore destroying the entire plot going on to destroy this island. But we ultimately discover what the treasure's all about. And it turns out there aren't billions and billions of Wulongs waiting around for someone to discover. It wasn't hidden on the island like they had hoped. So, you know, it turns out that this thing that Spike pocketed and Bianca let him keep is actually the treasure after all. And it turns out to be this love song from Priscilla to her flame.
Yeah, the partner song to Diamonds. And I think it's really charming that the grandkids didn't want the treasure and they didn't want the song. They really had a respect for their grandfather, Captain H, that if this was a private gift between them and these people are long gone in the past, they're fine not dredging stuff up again. Which may or may not have been the reason that after Spike listened to the song, he deleted it.
I think there's an implication here that if a music producer were to find this song, they could release the track posthumously and make billions of Wulongs. That is my understanding of how that plays out.
I get that too, but of course our hero decides to make that choice for society and prevent it from happening.
And also never make any money. I think this is like the fifth time we've seen him turn down any kind of bounty or reward at the end of the journey.
Right. That is something that through this podcast is really starting to raise my eyebrow. They are starving, and even though nobody ever really sees it, Spike screws them out of making it big, like, a couple of times. So there were only two Cowboy Bebop games made. I say only because this is such a beloved franchise, we're talking about it so much. And there's a ton of board games made, more than two. We'll get to that some other time. But there are Cowboy Bebop references spread throughout other video games. And there's kind of a pocket of journalism on the internet for recommending games that maybe you would enjoy if you liked Cowboy Bebop and were hungry for more. Jamie found one of these lists on thegamer.com. Not my favorite, actually. They recommended 10 games to play if you like Cowboy Bebop. At the top of the list was No Man's Sky. I actually put a significant amount of time into No Man's Sky, and all I can say is the theme of starvation is definitely there, but not much else. It is a survival game in which you are put on a planet, and much like a Subnautica or a Don't Starve, you have to start gathering resources and crafting and stacking up what you collect against these goals to get back out into space on your ship and continue to survive. There are aliens in it, and there aren't aliens in Bebop, and it is extremely lonely. And even though there are lonely people in Cowboy Bebop, I don't think it's a particularly lonely show. It's about relationships. And so I don't really see No Man's Sky, for example, as a Bebop analog.
See, Mass Effect is also on this list. I don't have any personal experience of Mass Effect, but I have several friends who are just wild for it. And it seems to me that, like, maybe the intercrew relationships are somehow Bebop-centric, but otherwise, that is not my understanding of what Mass Effect is all about.
Correct. Mass Effect is one of my favorite games of all time. I don't see it as being particularly Bebop-esque other than it is in space. It has guns. But the other one I wanted to point out from this list was Death Stranding. I have not played this one, but it is one of my partner's favorite games. I asked them if it was a replacement for Cowboy Bebop, and they say it does take place in a post-apocalyptic gig economy, and everyone has a dark past, so they can kind of see it. But I bought them the art book from Death Stranding recently, and it's way more like sci-fi horror-esque than I think ever really happens in Bebop. So basically, I don't like this list. I think this list is bad, but I think the person who wrote it tried their best. I think the lesson that we learn here is that not a lot of games really capture Cowboy Bebop well. In fact, Cowboy Bebop for the PS1 didn't even do it. So I hope there's a game out there that really starts hitting some of these notes again.
It's interesting that you say there's no real Cowboy Bebop analog out there aside from the games themselves, if that, because in 2014, that was a similar feeling, I would say, out there. At the time, a group known as Venus Patrol also felt similarly, and so they decided to host the Space Cowboy Game Jam. It was a two-week game jam experience where game developers were invited to create games inspired by Cowboy Bebop that could be interpreted very widely. And then the best games voted thereon would be displayed at the Marfa Film Festival in Texas. I happened to participate in this game jam. I submitted a game known as Corgi Simulator 2071, which stars Watson, and I developed it alongside my co-developer, Ryan. We decided to make a full motion video game where Watson was essentially a Tamagotchi, and you would make him bark and confuse people on the ship because his ultimate goal was to distract his captors and get back to the Bebop. It's since had 45,000 views and over 800 downloads. It was also rated one of Zoe Quinn's top 10 games of 2016. Another game coming out of the Space Cowboy Game Jam at the time is known as Jazzu. It's made by July Babies, which are all my friends, David Lasky, Eric Wang, and Ben Marion. And they made this really interesting conversation piece about two unusual patrons at a bar. It's all music driven. There is actually no dialogue to it. There is no fighting, but it is a very like Wild West feel bar fight brawl scene that you would feel in Cowboy Bebop. So check those out. Those are both on itch.io along with all the other games that were submitted. We'll post the link on our Twitter.
That is so awesome. I can't wait to check some of those out. There is one more game that is definitely directly inspired by Cowboy Bebop. It's called Gemini Rue, and it is a graphic adventure game that came out in 2011. It's sort of a outer space noir style, and the game designer, whose name is Joshua Nurnberger, he is on record saying that Cowboy Bebop, particularly Ballad of Fallen Angels, inspired these environments. There are crime syndicates and bloody eye and drug themes, and all five crew members are hidden in the game as cameos. I'm just going to quickfire some more references to Cowboy Bebop that I have personally come across in my time as a gamer. We've mentioned previously on this podcast that Bloody Eye is in Rimworld as well as Enter the Gungeon. In Tales from the Borderlands, there's one character that dies and you can send out a beacon in his honor. And one of the options for what that beacon can say is "See you, Space Cowboy." "See you, Space Cowboy" is also an eject message in Titanfall. As you blast out of your suit, it pops up on the screen. In Overwatch, if Ashe kills an enemy McCree on the Horizon Lunar Colony, she'll also say, "See you, Space Cowboy." "See you, Space Cowboy," and you're going to carry that weight, come up in like a bajillion games. My favorite Easter egg that is actually done by Steve Bloom himself comes in, unsurprisingly, Mass Effect. Steve Bloom plays Grunt and refers to himself drunkenly in the DLC as a space cowboy, and that is for sure Steve having some fun with his time as Spike Spiegel. I'm curious if that was his idea or BioWare's. Maybe we'll get to ask him someday. And also, fun fact, Jennifer Hale, who we see in the Cowboy Bebop movie, is Commander Shepard, FemShep, the one true ship. Don't at me.
This is by no means the only reference to Cowboy Bebop out there in media or video games. You can go to tvtropes.org for a more thorough list of all of those appearances.
Yeah, I thought we had come up with a really like cool big list, and then there were actually so many more.
There are a lot.
So that about wraps up our discussion about the Cowboy Bebop video games. And yeah, Jamie especially has a lot of chops in the video game events and dev space, but we could have even more knowledge if we brought in some cool friends. So Jamie has introduced us to someone awesome today.
We are pleased to introduce to our listeners today Derek Fields, founder and creative director of Waking Oni Games. We felt his expertise on video games and artistry and anime would be great in discussing the Cowboy Bebop adaptation games. Thanks for joining us, Derek.
Thank you for having me.
Hi, Derek. It's so nice to meet you.
Hello. I really appreciate being here. I'm excited to be a part of this conversation.
Cool. So when we were talking about the potential of a video game episode, self-contained, we knew that we'd have to talk about the PS1 and PS2 games. And it just struck me as like, you are the perfect person to discuss these topics. Not only are you a longtime fan of anime, you also love the show, and you're also an independent game developer and have a lot of knowledge as to the challenges of game development and all that comes with it. Some background for our audience: Waking Oni is producing a game called Onsen Master, which is a resource management game inspired by the Ghibli film Spirited Away. So tell us about the project. How's it been going?
Onsen Master has been coming along well. It's been a ride of a development, to say the least. I think any developer or any developer can share their ups and downs a part of getting a game out the door. And ours is not impervious to those circumstances. But I can say our game is on the way out. We are looking forward to releasing this year. Most recently, we have been opening things up for alpha and alpha access, so testers can give us critical feedback about what sort of finalizations we can make before ultimately releasing it. So I'm excited.
I'm excited for you. I've been seeing this game in development for so long, and you've been showing it at different festivals and game expositions, and it's coming along so nicely.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And yeah, it's been fun to bump into each other in any of those events. as well as just to get people's sort of live impression of the game, which makes me all the more excited to finally see it out the door.
So what makes the art style of anime so applicable to video games, or such a great type of property to make into a video game?
Yeah. In a lot of ways, you can lean on an anime art style to kind of pull back on how many resources it might take to get stylization, certain stylizations or aesthetic out the door for a game. I think that is a really great opportunity to use anime or illustrative art styles as kind of a limited resource or a manageable resource, I should say. But I could definitely see in other circumstances, it can also become one that's pretty intense too, using, I don't know, certain anime games like Guilty Gear or Dragon Ball Z, which in reality are incredibly resource heavy and high poly. But ultimately, yeah, going back to the original statement, it allows for easier scope, leaning in on stylizations and aesthetic, and ultimately driving home the visual that you had in your head.
I remember when Waking Oni was forming as a studio and that you yourself had personal aspirations. Do you mind telling our listeners a bit about what you hope to accomplish with your studio?
Yeah, I can say Waking Oni started really as a formation between my roommates at the time and a friend of ours. And we, at the start, just wanted to create a game. Mostly that at initially. That was years ago when Onsemaster was just kind of a hobbyist project. And I would say all of us went through certain life changes and navigating the path of what we wanted to do as developers. For myself and for Waking Oni, that vision has really evolved into keenly wanting to provide games that can not only explore certain cultural intersections, but place representation right in the front of anime-inspired content. I think being an individual that grew up in the 80s and 90s and not yet seeing myself represented in anime in the way that I had hoped, I would like to create Waking Oni as a stepping off point to be able to provide that.
When we asked you how the game was going, there was sort of a chuckle like, you know, it's going how all indie games go. So what are some of the challenges you face as a developer? Or maybe what are some of the challenges you've come across with this game?
I would say overall, the biggest ones would be time, funding, and scope. Those would probably be the biggest ones, all of which are kind of hand in hand with one another. Waking Oni and Onsenmaster both were formed under circumstances where you know, all of us are working other jobs, have other commitments in our lives that definitely eat up the allotted time that somebody might have during a given day. And that's been kind of the biggest uphill circumstance overall with creating a game like Onsenmaster. Ideally, I would love for Onsemaster and the next project to start to be the pathway towards being able to create indie games at a more full-time rate. I think that would be ideal.
So you already dove a bit into your love of 90s anime. And I mean, I'm right with you. Seinen anime from the 90s is just some good stuff. What makes Cowboy Bebop different from other seinen anime or anime from the 90s that you enjoy?
Most of all, the musicality. That's like, I think when people are set down to watch Cowboy Bebop, you are immediately confronted with this jazz ensemble of an opening theme song. And that lets you know that the experience that you're about to get as a show is, in my opinion, vastly different than a lot of other anime openings where, you know, you might have the stereotypical, or I should say, not stereotypical, but more so quintessential band that is creating a theme song that is particular for the show. But in the vein of Cowboy Bebop, it's that band, the Seatbelts, and their music is consistent throughout the entire show, and it's pulling you from beginning to end. And so, it's the music. It's the music most of all, the jazz especially. And you don't get a lot of representation for that in that sort of media.
What else do you like about the series? Maybe a really memorable moment or a favorite character?
That's a challenge, a little bit. I find all of the characters really lovable in certain ways because you get an opportunity to go down their story and learn more about who they are. And it doesn't feel like a filler or anything like that. It's a part of the experience. It's a part of the show. I love Ed most of all, I think. Ed comes as sort of not necessarily aloof, but hard to approach because you don't know how to engage with their character. And then the complexities of who they are, just as much as anybody else, starts to unveil themselves as the show goes on, learning about her parents and the length of her name and where it came from and so on, I think are all really lovable moments for me. And I mean, of course, Jet, and I could start, I think if I continue, I'll start to list off all of them. So I'm going to stop there.
I think you're our first Ed stan on the show. So thank you for that.
I love Ed. Ed is great.
So we haven't yet heard anything about Ed's casting for the new Netflix live action adaptation, which has a little bit of trepidation on our end. We're concerned. But what are your feelings on the upcoming series? And do you have any predictions?
Right. Netflix has had a weird road for adapting certain anime series. I'm looking at you, Death Note. It's been a ride. So when speaking towards Cowboy Bebop, the casting makes me just a little bit hopeful because the folks who have been casted for the show so far are really great actors, and I'm looking forward to them. I hope it's not in any way debilitated by the Netflix anime experience. But I think my expectations are going to continue to go on with trepidation. If I set my expectations either low or non-existent, then maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised and then be able to come out and say, that was really great, right?
Death Note was so weird, though. Oh, my goodness. So we brought you on today because we are discussing the video games of Cowboy Bebop. Do you have any experience with either of the PlayStation Bebop games, or do you know anything about them?
I only know about the Cowboy Bebop games in passing. I think those are one of those titles that probably in the heyday of really going through the series and discovering that there was other media that existed, you think, I would love to play that. And then it kind of fades into the back of your memory. So yeah, I only know them by name, but I've never experienced them for myself.
You know, I own the PS2 game for literally over 10 years. I have a box set of it, and wow. I had no way of playing it.
Yeah.
So knowing that, Lauren and I's only experience with the games have been through emulators. You know, we've never seen English ports of these games. They're kind of lost to the ages. Mm-hmm. So what are your feelings on region-specific video game releases and emulators in general?
Right. You know, it depends. I've had a similar experience wanting to play certain games of a specific franchise and being really passionate about wanting to experience that bit of content when you become so mired in all of the other elements. Yeah, you want to take it all in, naturally. I, too, have resulted in buying imports that I later discover. My endeavors for wanting to play this are a little bit more complicated than I first thought that they might be. And I might not get to experience this game in the way that I anticipated. And so personally, when it comes to emulators and collecting or playing games, I think it's a great way to be able to gain accessibility to games that otherwise would not see any support and especially would not see any localization. There is a big handful of titles that I can think of, which I have resorted to emulators in order to get the experience, in order to be able to go through some of the dialogue that was passionately translated by somebody else of the community of fans and ultimately still feel a part of that sort of media and the celebration of it all. So circling back, do what you got to do. if it's not out and you can't get it and it's not going to see a future here, you got to do it.
Isn't that what fans say of Mother 3?
I was thinking about Mother 3 when you're talking about fan translation. That is a super passion project that came out and is just a huge labor of love. And I have played it.
Yeah, I love when fans come together to see to those types of things being created, whether it's, an old game that's no longer supported and we're now creating DLC and expansive content, or just as we're talking localization for a game that otherwise will not be localized. I'm here for it. I love it.
This question may be a little bit vague, but it's going to lead into the specific games we're discussing today.
Sure.
The PS1 game had to make some very specific visual choices, and you can kind of see where the restrictions and limitations were. And then that's the same again for PS2. So can you speak a little bit as a developer as to, like, when you're creating something, what do you have to take into consideration when you're thinking about what consoles or where this game is going to be distributed to?
Taking a moment to kind of take that all in and maybe think from the seat of those developers at that time, I could imagine there was probably a pretty rushed, or, well, I can't assume too much, but I can assume that there might have been some circumstances in terms of publisher agreement, getting the game out in a reasonable time frame, and ensuring that it matched the original aesthetic in some kind of way. When it comes to anime-inspired games, you know, after the after a series has been created, and then you see it being supported on console or something like that, there always seems to be some sort of through line in terms of the quality of that game versus how you might compare it up to other games in the similar genre. And to me, it always seems like games that are derived from anime, where the series came first and the game came after, that those types of games get a little rushed out the door. And so maybe those, thinking about that and applying it to a title like Cowboy Bebop, where maybe some of the visual aesthetic didn't feel on par with other PlayStation 1 or 2 titles in that same time frame, I can only assume that maybe the publishing agreement might have been rushed. Maybe they had to get it out the door while Cowboy Bebop was a popular topic and a really big focus in the community at that time and on television at that time, to ensure that they're going to earn a specific revenue and all those types of things. If it had the wiggle room to be able to explore deeper game mechanics, explore what, you know, a fully realized PlayStation 2 title might look like, or a PlayStation 1 title might look like, I'd imagine it would probably feel a little more fleshed out in a lot of ways if it currently doesn't.
I have shared in our chat here two images from the PS1 game that kind of show how these developers adapted to the graphical limitations of their time. There are some really interesting choices made, especially in terms of the landscape, which I find quite beautiful, but how those can contrast with the actual ships or interactive elements, the things the player actually has to play with. So we just wanted to get your sort of opinion on these images. We know there are just a couple, but what looks good about this? What looks true to the anime? And what do you feel like could be improved upon?
Yeah. And you said that both of these are from the same game. That's correct. The PlayStation 1 title.
Yes, PS1, yep. Which was a Rails shooter. They were trying to go for a Star Fox sort of thing, we think.
Right. You know, I think as far as the texture, the chat, the sort of chat icon that you see of Ed, those being able to build a game off an anime series, there's a lot of creative landscape that's already been set for you, being able to create icons and you go, okay, you know, there's no reason to deviate from any other art directions. It allows creators to be able to create assets that are vibrant in color, maybe simple in some of the line art and details that any of those assets might maintain, and build those in a way that could be reasonable for, say, the overall memory load or the overall scope design, depending on how long the game is or in what time frame they had to develop it. I would have no idea how long it took to build this game, but I would imagine like it probably wasn't short or anything like that. That said, titles like Star Fox and other rail shooters at that time set a sort of bar for the art direction that needed to be met minimally in order to be accepted in that time period. And so maybe, my guess, maybe there wasn't a big drive to, you know, need to push resources far and see how performance could go as far as it could before ultimately having to scale back. Maybe those things did happen, but I think in terms of what they achieved here for the background, for the merriment of anime assets and game assets, I think it worked out well.
I'm glad to hear that. as someone who's playing the game now in 2021, I can't really handle the art style. It's not for me. It feels very dated, but it's good to know that at least during its time, this was very competently done and managed, I'm sure, by Bandai.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm really interested in the point you made that for the genre, there was like a bar set by one game. And as long as we're like at that bar, Star Fox was extremely geometric. And so I think there's a lot of forgiveness for like, yeah, this is good enough. I get that.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, I think definitely the show is the main dish. We go to watch Cowboy Bebop and everything else that we experience about it might be tertiary. And so when I see a game like this, and compared to other anime games that have sought release after a series reaching some sort of commercial success, that maybe there wasn't a huge drive to, say, redesign the wheel on what a real shooter feels like or looks like as far as a PlayStation 1 game goes.
For our listeners, I did share a resource, a video from the PS2 game for Derek to just kind of glance over. Do you feel that the adaptation of the show for the PS2 console is adequate? Like, what would you compare it to? Do you feel like the characters on model? Give us your grade.
Yeah, you know, I had an opportunity to check this out a little earlier, and I want to say first, I have a specific bias for titles on the PlayStation 2. I love the time period that was PlayStation 2 and the games that released on there, because depending on when a game came out in the earliest days of PlayStation 2 to the final days of the console, you might see vastly different experiences and ways of the level design. Maybe there's CG cutscenes, maybe there's full voice acted dialogue and so on. And these sort of, in summation, PlayStation 2 was such a innovative point in time for games and games making this leap from what we experienced on Nintendo 64 and PlayStation 1 to that era. Looking at a title like Cowboy Bebop, Suiyoku. I love that title. Cowboy Bebop Suiyoku no Serenade. It looks like it fits right in with the time period. There's something that I get that's really, really nostalgic. I would probably really appreciate playing this game now. I would probably appreciate playing the game upon its release. It reminds me a lot of other anime-inspired games that came out during that time period as well. And I think it's doing great.
Oh, that's good to hear.
It's so nice to have this positivity on the show. So if you were asked to adapt a popular, much beloved franchise such as Cowboy Bebop into the medium of video games, what are some of the things you would want to research or keep in mind? What would you consider most valuable in that process?
Ooh, in a lot of ways, I think about the shared experience that is had when watching an anime series, whether it's contemporary, whether it's in the past and you're sharing your memories of a beloved show. It's the shared experiences that come along with watching a series that for me make those things incredibly special, and the people that I've connected with over them, very wonderful relationships, and would like to think that those shows are special to them for similar reasons. And so when creating a title, if we were to use, say, Cowboy Bebop for an example, I would love to hear community feedback on what they identify as a big reason that brought them to the show. And stretching that to any other series, the same thing. What brought you to the show? What kept you there? And what were those shared experiences like when you talked about it with other people? And then find ways to recreate those experiences in a game. And that, I know that sounds very kind of like lofty and maybe a broad stroke of buzzwords in a way, but it is really important to kind of rebuild those experiences. And so to, again, kind of use Cowboy Bebop, for example, maybe once more players are confronted with the musicality of the experience and they're getting new musical numbers from the seatbelts, that would be the perfect result, right? And then next, it's feeling as though you're a part of the world and feeling a part of a narrative that are in some ways very comedic, very melancholic, and feeling that you are getting depth with either a new character, getting an opportunity to connect and build relationships with current existing characters, or you yourself feel like somebody who is new and seated within that universe. Because there are a lot of stories in Cowboy Bebop, and it showed that there are many, many layers across the different environments that they traversed.
That's really interesting that you bring up the point of, you know your audience, see what they liked initially about the show, because I see that in your work on Onsen Master. I can definitely tell the vibes that are, you know, this is very Spirited Away. And then it, for our audience, it plays a bit like Overcooked in a way. Yep. So there's a lot of character to it. And I'm glad that you can bring that kind of feel to a video game experience, even though Ghibli won't.
I would love that. I would really, really love that. You know, Ni no Kuni was close enough, but I need more.
Say another Cowboy Bebop game were made today. Is there another video game title or type of mechanic you'd like to see in that game? I reference here in our notes that someone has shopped together a Red Ed Redemption. It's a photo of Ed's face on the cover of the game. but besides that, what would you like to see in a Cowboy Bebop revival?
You know, it's hearing the Red Ed Redemption was already kind of a seed planted in an otherwise really expansive idea for maybe what I would hope a Cowboy Bebop game could look like. When I think of a game like Cowboy Bebop, a contemporary Cowboy Bebop game, and what that might include, it has to be in some ways open world, and bounty hunting has to be a component that's a part of it, as well as being able to travel to different planets and see how those communities thrive and the shared stories and experiences. So now there has to be branching narratives and side characters and side quests, and maybe maybe you get to decorate your ship, and all these other types of experiences. It would be hilarious that every ship interior, if everybody had their own vehicle that they got to travel the world in, by default came with bell peppers and beef, and then you had to go out and seek other foods and things like that for yourself.
Oh my God, I want that.
I really like the open world idea because during the pandemic, I played through The Witcher 3 and I probably put 80 hours into it, which I think is a lot, but not nearly as many as some people on Reddit put into it. But what I enjoyed about The Witcher was that it was pretty clear that there was a central plot you could follow and advance the story with your main characters, or you could just take Witcher jobs. You could just go and help some little township fight off a dragon or a wyvern or a werewolf or whatever, and just kind of do your job until you are ready to return to the main arc. And I could see having that sort of mechanic surrounding bounty hunting being very fun and rewarding.
I agree. I agree 100%. I think seeing a game play out in that type of way, centered on the Cowboy Bebop universe, works so very well. I think we've seen other games that do take a bit of inspiration from space bounty hunting and that sort of cosmic cowboy lifestyle. And there's a lot of success in that.
There's also a lot of game developers out there who are big Cowboy Bebop nerds, and they put a lot of Easter eggs in their game, even if they can't make a Cowboy Bebop game. So why do you think game developers are compelled to insert Easter eggs like this?
You know, a lot of I am only speaking from personal experience, but the insertion of Easter eggs is paying homage to the things that inspired you initially and ultimately saying, hey, if I got the opportunity to just make that game, I 100% would. You know, using Onsen Master as an example, if I had an opportunity to make Spirited Away the game, oh, best believe, resources provided, I would go just balls to the wall with that one. I would love it. I would love it a lot. So Cowboy Bebop and inserting references in other space bounty hunting games, yes, you know, the community wants that. They want to feel like they're a part of those types of worlds and feel, even if you're slightly adjacent to it, to feel a part of that type of world. And I think that's what Easter eggs do, is they kind of act like a vehicle to allow players to speculate, oh, is this game low-key a part of the Cowboy Bebop universe, or kind of written in a way where somebody could assume it might be? I think it's a great way to do that.
Awesome points all around. We have really appreciated all of your insight today. This has been just a fun and super knowledgeable talk. And we hope our listeners want to get to know you better, too. So if people online wanted to find you, follow your work, where would you like them to look?
All of my work can be found at WakingOniGames.com. And same for social media. If you look up Waking Oni Games or Waking Oni, you will find me, Onsen Master, and the other things that we are tooling about on.
We're really excited for Onsen Master. How can people hear when it's finally ready, or where should they look for it?
Onsen Master can be found on the Waking Oni Games website, but most importantly, hitting up Steam to be able to wishlist it. That is a huge help as we draw towards the release of the game.
Also, check out Derek on Twitch. Lovely Twitch channel content you got going on there.
Thank you. Thank you. I love playing retro games there. This is why my love for PlayStation 2 games is so high and PlayStation 1 games. And I'm super thankful that you invited me to talk on specifically those topics, because it's all I usually center the games that I play on that channel.
Well, please play the PS2 game. I think you'll really like it.
I have to find it now. I think that's my goal following this conversation.
Great. Thank you so much, Derek.
Thank you. I really appreciate being here.
Coming up next week, we're back on the anime train. If you want to be prepared for next week's Bebop Beat, please watch Bohemian Rhapsody. We'll be bringing in a chess expert to tell us if Chess Master Hex is really all that. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Bebop Beat. If you like our show, please rate us on Apple or wherever you find your podcasts. Find us on Instagram and Twitter at Bebop Beat. Our email address is bebopbeatpodcast@gmail.com.
The Bebop Beat is hosted and produced by Jamie Sanchez and Lauren Fates. Our editor and associate producer is Angela Geis. Our logo and art assets are by Kat Janda.
Faye screams, "Spike!" just like somebody, was it the frog, would scream, "Fuck!" I'm going to find out who it was. Hold on. Who screams? I think it's the frog. What's the frog's name? List of Star Fox characters. We're getting there. Slippy Toad. I'm just going to say it's the frog. We're going with it.